Welcome to the business of open source. Every week, we explore different aspects of the relationship between money and open source software, talking with industry experts about monetizing open source projects, building a company around an open source or several open source projects, and the business value that open source provides. Thank you for joining me. Welcome to the business of open source. I am your host, Emily O'Meara. And today I'm chatting with Ian Tien, who is the co-founder and CEO of Mattermost. Thank you so much for joining me, Ian.
Thanks, Emily. Really appreciate you having me.
First of all, if you could just introduce yourself for any listeners who haven't heard of you or haven't heard of Mattermost.
Thanks. My name is Ian Tien. I'm a co-founder and CEO of Mattermost, so one of the co-creators of the Mattermost open source project, which is really providing developer team collaboration to thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people around the world. And, you know, we're an open source alternative to a number of sort of proprietary collaboration solutions like Slack and Trello and Notion and Asana for project management, for real-time messaging. We just added audio calling and screen share, so we're an alternative to Zoom in certain use cases. And it's been a platform that continues to grow and flourish in an open source community and an open source platform.
Excellent. I actually have so many questions, but my first one is, why do developers need their own special Slack or their own special Zoom? Like, what's special about the developer audience that requires like their own specific collaboration platform?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, you'll just see this. I think everyone's like, you know, yet another sort of workplace messaging solution. You know, there's IRC, there's Slack, there's Discord, there's Microsoft Teams. I think Cisco WebEx has its hat in the ring. And, you know, why so many? And what you think about in the digital world is these platforms are kind of like rooms. And the question is like, well, who's in the room? And, you know, people want the room to do certain things. And on the extreme end for developers, what they really want is a lot of integrations in the room, a lot of automation, a lot of shortcuts, a lot of productivity enhancements. And in order to do that, they really need control. They need to say, this is my room. You know, this is something that's special for our workflow. And what you'll find is a lot of technical organizations, what really gets them to accelerate and be productive and increase productivity is systematic changes, right? If I can automate one thing, if I can save a few steps out of this process, if I can get this thing done slightly faster and it's something I'm doing all the time, you really get these sort of permanent increase to productivity. So to do that, you really need a room and a platform and a workplace that you can fine tune and you can adjust. And I think that's why so many people gravitate towards solutions that are extensible, that give people control of the rooms, which gives them control of their work and lets them be more productive.
So one of the things I'm really interested in, I love that analogy, actually, like that Mattermost is sort of like, you know, a physical room that has a bunch of terminals in it, whereas, you know, maybe the solution for the collaboration for lawyers has like a bunch of legal dictionaries. I don't know, but it's a room that's set up specifically, you know, for developers' needs. But one of the questions I had is, how did you decide that Mattermost was for developers, as opposed to, for example, like Mattermost is collaboration for very paranoid organizations who don't want, you know, who need to host on-prem?
That's a great question. I think when we started, you know, we were a video game company and we'd created this solution for ourselves. We open sourced it and it kind of started getting known as open source Slack. Open source Slack had similar keyboard shortcuts. It could do all the things that Slack could do. It was even compatible with Slack integrations. You get it all open source, mobile, desktop, web. And we kind of became the open source Slack as the open source version. And then we started getting these enterprise customers. You know, one of the largest manufacturers in the world became, you know, one of our first enterprise customers, and they really need reliability. It was developer adopted, but they really needed control and reliability. There's no way they could be okay with an outage of any sort. And then we get one of the, you know, biggest semiconductor, you know, manufacturers in the world as another customer. And then we had the United States Department of Energy, you know, adopt us. And that became, as you kind of put it, the sort of Slack for paranoid people. It's like no outages, no downtime, have to have complete control. And there's a quite a large market for that class of organizations that just need to be running all the time, that need to do mission critical work, really important work. And there's just, they just have a certain set of requirements. And ultimately going from this open source Slack to the Slack for paranoid people as sort of our first and second chapters of the project was really eye-opening in how important it is to listen to the market. So that's kind of the transition. And from there, we've done more. We've kind of got additional products now and a suite-based strategy. All that comes from listening to our community and to our customers.
So would you say you're still Slack for paranoid people? Actually, just an aside, like I think you should put that on your website, like Slack for paranoid people. Or is it more, you know, a subtle shift, but nonetheless a shift? Like, no, we're Slack for developers, or we're collaboration for developers. We're not focused on the paranoid folks anymore.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think of it as definitely a use case. So, you know, that Slack for paranoid people, you know, workplace messaging, mission critical workflows, that's definitely continues to be part of it. What we've added on top is, hey, we've got Zoom for paranoid people, right? So we can do audio calling and screen share, and it's really high quality. It's with this open source platform called Pion that we've included in our packaging. It's WebRTC based, and you can think of us as, you know, Slack for paranoid people, adding on Zoom for paranoid people. And where that's important is, you know, if you've got a critical security incident, right? We actually had one ourselves where we had, you know, we found a vulnerability that we could use to break into many Golang-based systems if they're using SAML SSO. So there's an XML parser vulnerability, and we found that it could be exploited, and it was a really big deal. I'm like, holy cats. When we were able to use, you know, Mattermost as something that's completely private, like we kind of put our tinfoil hats on, like we had this vulnerability that could get into some really major systems in the world, private and public companies. So we put our little tinfoil hats on, and they were like, ooh, we're using Zoom right now, but it's a third party. We have no idea if their AI is like monitoring our words, if they're picking up on, you know, things that we're saying. So what we did, we added afterwards that sort of Zoom for paranoid people, this like security ops war room, this completely private way to communicate, largely because of our own experience. So you can say Slack for paranoid people, Zoom for paranoid people. We've got a new project management solution called Focal Boards. You can go to focalboard.com. You can the open source project, 11,000 stars, and it's an open source alternative to sort of Trello, Notion, Asana for project management. So you can say, hey, we got project management for paranoid people. And then we've actually got something called Playbooks. If you use like Rundeck or Transposit or Fire Hydrant for incident management, we've got an alternative to that for paranoid people. So it's almost a suite for paranoid people that really, you know, cannot have any downtime, want complete control, want complete transparency of the source code. So that's kind of where we are right now. And maybe it belongs on our website. Yeah, I think that's definitely one use case. What's different now, because we just keep growing and innovating and adding, we actually have cloud versions of all of these products now. So you can have us for the SaaS version, you can have us for the on-prem version, and there's a lot more choice. So maybe the on-prem is a little bit more for paranoid people, then we've got maybe a suite for more mainstream. And as we grow, and I think that's the context for why sort of Slack for paranoid people is a use case. It's definitely something that a segment of our audience really cares about. We've expanded our offerings to the paranoid audience, and then we've expanded our offerings to mainstream through SaaS and cloud.
Excellent. I was mostly joking, by the way, about putting paranoid on the website. A lot of people don't like to, you know, they don't like to acknowledge that they're paranoid, even if they are.
I think it's actually really great marketing. I mean, there's a lot of security organizations, and yeah, it's tongue in cheek, but I think it totally works. I think that there's a segment out there that like, yes, that's me. Like, you're speaking my language.
Yeah, you are probably right. There are probably people out there that are like, for paranoid people, yes, sign me up. That's me. Talking about actually something totally different that you just briefly alluded to, but I think it's really interesting. It's a relationship between your first video game company and Mattermost, and sort of this origin story of how Mattermost came into being.
What are the connections? Like, how does a video game company become a messaging company? And you think, well, Slack was a video game company before it came Slack, you know, Stuart Butterfield. And then Discord with Jason Citron was a video game company, you know, doing MOBAs before it became Discord. You'll see in Asia, you know, Line was a video game company from Naver before it became, you know, one of the largest messaging communications companies over in Asia. So there's this pattern of like, well, what does video games have to do with messaging? And ultimately, you know, a lot of what these games companies, interactive entertainment companies do is they really create a space that people want to be in, and they want to spend their time. So, you know, I think that's one of the key connections is how do you have an experience that people, you know, are gravitating toward, that, that they want to be there? And what are the dynamics of essentially that room that, you know, people would be, that people love, people are happy and people spend their time there, and eventually it becomes part of their habits and their processes, and eventually becomes sort of these systems within organizations. And I think it really comes to just, you know, make something people want, make something where people are engaged and they enjoy and they get what they need out of it.
Interestingly enough, so I did not know about the that history of Slack and Discord. That is really fascinating that there's such a pattern of these messaging and collaboration platforms coming from video game companies.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost like it's like a prerequisite. It's like the investor is like, so what video game company have you built? And they're like, what? Where is that coming from? It's like, pass.
So at what point, though, did you decide that you weren't going to be a video game company anymore, that you were going to instead have an open source company that was going to do messaging?
I think it's really product market fit. It just, you know, we just kind of saw it. And, you know, I remember this one call I got from the CIO of the Department of Energy. It was kind of out of the blue. And we were on this phone call and he's like, who are you? I'm like, I'm Ian and we're a company called Mattermost. And they're like, how did you get into the Department of Energy? And I'm like, I don't know, right? Like, we didn't know we were in the Department of Energy. So what happens is people have adopted Mattermost and deployed Mattermost to like multiple labs in the DOE, and they were all using it to communicate and collaborate. And you know, the CIO thought that we had someone carrying like a briefcase and selling, you know, knocking on doors to the engineers and selling them this software, which was absolutely not what we had at the time. We had an open source project. It was, you know, easy to use, a single Linux binary under MIT license with Postgres or MySQL that anyone could install. You could install on Docker and make it super easy. It's just, you know, we've got an omnibus now. There's a Cade operator. You can do it, you know, many, many different ways. And Department of Energy with like most of our customers, just had developers adopt it. They got value out of it. They controlled everything. They could bypass all the sort of gatekeepers. You don't need legal approval because it's MIT licensed, open source license. You don't need sort of security and privacy approval because you contain all the data. We got through all these gatekeepers that naturally would take, you know, a whole team to like, you know, do their go-to-market motion through. And we actually got to the people who were realizing value with the software, with the platform. And they just naturally started to expand and fold their processes into the software. And then it gets the CIO who's like, how did you do this? Like, how did you get in here? And it was at that point where we said, hey, this is a real business. This is something special. You have these, you know, rare opportunities to be part of something that's got this much pull into these organizations. And I think, you know, that was definitely one day I was pretty sure we were onto something next level. And then before that, we'd had enterprise customers and we started building. But like when you get to the Department of Energy, that was pretty incredible for us. And now we're in U.S. Air Force, we're in Department of Defense, we're in, you know, Carahsoft, the largest partner reselling into the federal government, carries Mattermost. So we've come a long way since then. But I think that those early days, you know, that conversation really did cement it for me.
And what happened to the video game company?
We just divested it. So, you know, games are kind of a hits-driven business. One thing that was interesting is, you know, we were in Y Combinator, summer 12, the same batches as Coinbase and Instacart, and they kind of like figured out what they wanted to do from day one and grew these amazing companies. And Paul Graham, who was one of the partners in YC at the time, we go on these walks and we're walking around and we just, you know, we had this video game company. We were actually an HTML5 game engine at the time. We were like, we can replace Adobe Flash with JavaScript. This is like 2012 and it was like really cool technology. And we had a video game. And then I'm on this walk with Paul Graham. He's like, yeah, I think you should like change your business. I'm like, what? Like, you just invested in us. Like, we told you we're a video game company. He's like, yeah, I think you should change your business. But why? And it's like, well, you know, first game it was making money and, you know, it was growing. We were making $1,700 a day off the video game. And he says, well, what's probably going to happen is you might have a successful game and maybe your next one's successful, but it's going to be very difficult to do a string of these successful games. And it's like, you can kind of grow fast, but it's not really a venture backable business. But like, why did you invest in us? And it's like, well, we think that, you know, you have the ability to build really good software. We just don't think this is, you know, the games is the right solution. And for years, you know, and the answer is like, Paul Graham was completely right. PG was 100% correct. exactly what predicted is exactly what happened. And then we've luckily found found the Mattermost business, and we're super excited about that. And it's been a wonderful time. So you know, PG just is just amazing, and he kind of predicted it, and this is kind of where we ended up.
How critical do you think the fact that that Mattermost is open source was to its, you know, eventual success?
Like 1,000%, right? Like open source is 1,000% why Mattermost has been successful. We have 4,000 contributors. There's open 30,000 contributions. When you have more contributors and you have like staff at the company by like an order of magnitude, it really speaks to, you know, how important community is. And I think, you know, there's a general trend on, you know, this is where the world is kind of moving. It's moving towards open source, moving community, and absolutely fundamental. When you think about our space in particular, you think about any space, you always have three segments. You always have the first mover. In our segment, that's like Slack. It's like, okay, you know, found the way to do workplace messaging, kind of based on our IRC, but kind of its own thing, you know, web, mobile, desktop. That's the first segment, it's the first mover. The second segment is the incumbents. You got like Microsoft Teams. Hey, we got all the enterprises. Like, we're going to do something that's kind of like Slack. Here's Microsoft Teams. That's the second segment. And the third segment is what I believe is the most exciting, which is the open source segment. You always see this 1, 2, 3, and it's the open source that over time, you know, really starts to overtake the first mover and the incumbent. You'll see it in operating systems. You'll see it in databases. You'll see it in virtualization orchestration, you'll see it in containers, you see it in all the different layers, and you'll see it today in this collaboration space as open source and open cloud. So the cloud-based, you know, open source versions really are moving the needle in a lot of different ways.
That's actually a really interesting observation about Microsoft, which I wasn't thinking about. And in fact, this question could be for Slack. Like, to what extent do you even view Slack as a competitor? And I know that you're sometimes positioned as an alternative to Slack or an open source alternative to Slack, but like, to what extent do people even choose, say, like, should I choose Mattermost or Slack? Or is it a choice that's because of circumstances essentially made for them?
We don't see Slack that often in our markets. I think Slack is really big in Silicon Valley. I think it's big in, you know, a number of the tech organizations. And, or I guess it was big, I think, a few years ago, and it's kind of everywhere now, but I think Discord is probably larger than Slack, where people identify a lot more Discord. Like everyone knows Discord because their kids use it, and like, it's so part of culture, and so much happens on that platform. Microsoft is always, and so in terms of like, you know, who are we, where do we kind of show up? I think definitely at the beginning, we were with that world. So the Mattermost open source project has about 22,000 stars right now on GitHub. And that vertical, we definitely continue to continue to grow in and be part of that zeitgeist. The other part is an example is like Focal Board, right? Focal Board is 11,000 stars. So it's half the size of Mattermost itself. And most people don't even realize that Focal Board is part of Mattermost. So that's the open source Trello, Notion, Asana alternative. Now we're in a space of, hey, I really want a project management, work management solution that's integrated with my real-time messaging, that's integrated with my audio calling and screen share, that's integrated with my incident management. So when you think of the category that's going to be, hey, here's all the tools that I need to be a really productive software team, we're definitely something that's a little bit more new in terms of a suite. The closest ones would probably be something like a ClickUp. That kind of has a lot of these different products. We're not the same products, but like ClickUp isn't that sort of like, hey, you know, everything in one place, you know, one set of permissions, one user directory, everything flows, everything sort of works out of the box versus, you know, the world today is, hey, I've got Slack over here. I've got Trello over here. I've got Jira. I might have like Notion over here. Can someone, you know, open a GitHub issue ticket over here? And ultimately, that's our market, right? So our market is going from these point solutions that exist in the world that are kind of getting commoditized. They all kind of do the same thing. The innovation is kind of over in most of those categories, and saying what's really important is it's all integrated, and what's really important is it works out of the box. And then what's really important is you have extensibility, you have full visibility to source code, you've got a very sophisticated plugin architecture. You can make this platform do what your software teams need it to do. And really drive systematic productivity, really drive those permanent changes, cutting steps out of workflows, automating things, making things, everything run faster on a platform you control, versus spending more than half your time trying to stitch these things together and bolt steel plates over the holes in your platform. So that's kind of how we're thinking about the space. It's really moving from these point solutions, which Slack is a wonderful one, but just, you know, part of those, that point solution family, to an integrated suite, which is, you know, when you think about like where the world is in 10 years, like there's no way like we're still using like 15 different things. We're going to pick platforms that bring all these things together.
Interesting. When I actually think of like open source, I have to say that I don't think of it as excelling in the platform space. I think of it as being like somewhat more point solution-y.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think historically, I think that's where the world has kind of come from. I think, well, actually, you know, maybe I'll challenge that a little bit, because I think that what happens over time is you start with point solutions. And over time, when I think about, you know, GitLab, right, which is a full end-to-end suite that, you know, is really about that full DevOps lifecycle.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah, and the convergence of, you know, SQL and NoSQL, there's a lot of, I think you're probably right sort of 10 years ago, and I think you're right for maybe like 90% of, maybe 95% of the open source projects out there, which is like, I have an itch to scratch, you know, volume-wise, let me go figure this out. But I think that there are these projects that are sort of designed to really continue that innovation and solve bigger problems. And I think those are the ones that are really on a path to make a very large difference in the world.
I mean, that actually sort of opens up another question, though. Do you think that a product has to expand sort of horizontally to cover more, continue solving problems? Or could it just like go deeper and deeper and deeper in a very specific, like be a point solution, but be like the best point solution and continue innovating in that vein?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think both are possible. I think people can be really, really deep, and theirs can also be more broad. It really comes to, well, one of our values at Mattermost is this concept called high impact. And we're like, well, how do we make the highest impact? And the most important thing is we listen to our users and our customers. And our users or customers, well, we need audio. Can you integrate with WebEx? Can you do it with great, like Big Blue Button? Can you do like Zoom? Can you also do Microsoft Teams? Can you do Google Meet? Can we do this? Can we do this? And we're like, well, just, you want audio calling, you want screen share. Let's just go build that. When you sort of think about like, what's the most high impact thing you can do, connect to like 18 third party services or build it first party. There comes a point, and we would try connecting to all these different things. But what people really wanted was one button, and you're going to be on a call and you're going to screen share. It's going to be high quality. Next thing you want is recording. Okay, you got recording. Suddenly you've got like a Loom alternative as well. Suddenly you got a Loom and a Zoom alternative. So it's really about understanding and being connected to what the problem the customer is trying to solve, and then working back into the best solution that we can build in software. So whether that's going to be horizontal or vertical, it really depends on that context.
Tell me a little bit more about like, what did you have to learn, and what did you have to do like fundamentally differently when you moved from having a video game company to having an open source company that's selling software, which is different than selling video games?
What we found is a lot of the enterprises, large companies, very like, and public sector organizations want to, you know, they buy things, they don't buy things with a credit card. So the video game business was very much like it was 100% self-service. We had a support organization, but it was very much like a consumer experience. And we could flow that. With Mattermost, it's still, there's a lot of sort of product-led growth elements to it, some self-service elements to it, but we found that our customer base, which is these enterprises and public sector companies, this is, you know, defense organizations, this is financial services that have been around like for hundreds of years, you know, trillions of dollars of assets, like the most important, some of the most important organizations in the world, these tech companies with billions of users, they don't buy with a credit card. They, you know, they want to have a master services agreement, and they want to know that your compliance is, you know, hitting these measures, and you have to spin up sort of a sales and marketing organization to support that enterprise, you know, conversations and enterprise purchasing process. So that was very new. And it's one of these things that's like, it's more difficult to systematize But over time, we're trying to still as well drive automation, drive standardization, and get these systems in place. So I'd say that go to market, that sort of customer organization is very different. And that's probably one of the key things. Anyone who's building these open core companies, who's building sort of an enterprise software business, and that's coming from a more consumer-y background, that's the thing we all talk about with each other. It's like, oh, how are you building it? How does this work? What's the structure?
It's interesting that you brought up product-led growth, because that's kind of a buzzword. And how do you see product-led growth as fitting in? I mean, to be honest, like possibly that example you gave with the Department of Energy at the beginning is, I think that would fit under many people's definition of product-led growth. But it certainly isn't like now I'm swiping my credit card for $11 a month instead of $7 a month.
I mean, I call it three sort of like chapters that led to product-led growth. So you start off with like sort of sales-led growth, which is we get the deal before we deliver the value. So when you like are sold on like the vision and the solution to what you're looking for, you actually don't get the value until after you sort of sign, right? And you're kind of committed. And that's like, you know, sort of like sales 1.0. Sales sort of like 2.0 is a little bit more sort of like try and then buy. There's a free trial. There's a, you know, proof of concept. You get to sample, like, you know, sort of vet what we're selling you before you go sort of all in. So that's kind of trial, 14-day trial, 90-day trial, whichever it is. You know, it's sales sort of 2.0. Sale 3.0 is really that product-led growth. And by the way, there's a person named Adam Gross who's just got this wonderful presentation at online about this. But sales 3.0 is product-led growth in the sense that the product first delivers value for free. And it builds a lot of trust. So the end users, the people, like the problem that it solves, like, well, it's free. There's sort of, I can go and use this and I can solve it. And this is amazing. And I think I'm fine. And then as their usage increases, they're like, well, actually, we kind of need this paid version over here. Let's go have that conversation. And so when we think about product-led growth, it's sort of like the third sort of chapter in sales, not saying the first or the second, you know, there's nothing wrong with that for different businesses. It's just that, you know, that third sales motion was made possible sort of in recent history with the advent of open core and with freemium cloud.
I think that's true. On the other hand, to be a little bit devil's advocate about product-led growth, I know I talk to a lot of people who sort of assume product-led growth means that you can neglect, you know, sales 1 and 2.0, that it's sort of like an if you build it, they will come mentality.
Well, if you build it, they will come. Yeah, I think it's true to a certain extent. I think it's orthogonal, actually. So the most important thing is always be talking to customers and getting feedback. And whether you're a sales organization or you're a sales 1.0 or you're a product-led growth organization, you can skimp on the customer engagement and the validation of your ideas in either model. Where people sort of underinvest, and what we underinvested in the early days, is not having the seniority of sales and customer success leadership that would really accelerate our success, because it was such a strong product-led growth motion. And I think, you know, making those investments is really important. And I think that's probably the biggest trap for something that has product-led, that it starts off product-led growth is underinvesting in the business that you're going to become in the future.
That makes sense. I think of it as sort of like one prong in your sales strategy.
Yeah, that's a really great way to put it.
So what advice would you give other founders who either already have a project that's established that they want to commercialize, or maybe they don't have the project yet, but they want to build an open source startup? What sort of advice would you have for them?
I'd say there's a lot of really good blog posts and materials out there. I just do that research, just kind of, you know, watch Hacker News, search for open core and all the different sort of top articles. I think Sid at GitLab has a really great one. I think it's called Buyer-Based Open Core. They did an analytics conference a while ago. I definitely watched that one. It's on YouTube. So Buyer-Based Open Core. I think that's an excellent one. And, you know, as you kind of get going, I really highly recommend Y Combinator. It's just such a wonderful program. The people there are so amazing. And if you've got people who are really strong technically and are really good sort of general problem solvers, then what you need to connect them with is sort of the fundamental training and community and a number of people who've seen lots and lots and lots of like folks in that context. And I think if I was just thinking about, you know, probability distributions, going to Y Combinator for someone who's a really strong, you know, builder and wants to go from building software to building a business and has never done it before as a first timer, then I think, you know, YC is just, you know, that's what it's made for.
Excellent advice. Well, on that note, how can people follow you or get in touch with you or learn more?
Yeah, I'm Ian Tan at Twitter. So feel free just to message me anytime. Yeah, just happy to connect and answer any questions.
And if any listeners are paranoid developers, they need to check out Mattermost.
Yeah, and feel free to, you know, use an alias. Yeah, so paranoid developers, all are welcome.
Excellent. Well, Ian, thank you so much for joining me. This was a great conversation.
Thanks, Emily. This is wonderful.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Business of Open Source. If you'd like to learn more about positioning, messaging, and go-to-market for open source and cloud-native startups, head over to my blog, positioningopensource.com. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. I'm at Emily O'Meara, and you can feel free to reach out on Twitter or on my website and blog with questions or comments. If you enjoyed this episode, also please share and help more people discover this podcast. Thank you, and we hope to have you next week.